Hi, everybody. Welcome to Business Beat. I'm Ian Barrett. I'm with Aaron Hayes and David Ginsburg. And David, I'm going to introduce our guest today.
Please
because
do.
Because this is somebody I've known and loved for a very, very long time. Mike Hsu, a rock and roll DJ of formerly of WAAF, and in future, we don't know. But I couldn't let the opportunity go by to have him visit us and talk a little bit about radio in Worcester.
Yeah.
And
I'm excited for this one. This
Exactly. So David's a fan.
I've a local for years. I grew up listening to AF. I mean, I listened to AF when I was a little kid. It was our local radio station, and I've heard you on the air for 20 something years, and somewhere in that range.
Yeah, 20 years.
All over the time slots.
Oh yeah, I've done every time slot there. The afternoons was the last one.
Yeah.
And so I've covered the whole gamut of day parts. But like you, I grew up in Natick listening to AF.
Yeah.
So, and we heard that from a lot of people, former employees, and a lot of people that called up in the last couple of days before we pulled the plug, that was part of their lives for most of their teenage years,
yeah,
through their adult years and stuff. So it was really very touching.
I think that this for me was an interesting part for you guys to interface, because he's the general manager here, and he's got a job keeping this place going, and we're talking about radio and what it means to people. David, what does radio mean to people?
It's funny. Radio, for a lot of us of a certain generation, radio is inherently personal, and really it's a part of your life from the time you get up in the morning, and in the old days having clock radio that would wake you up to the radio, which I always did, to certainly being in the car and driving was the soundtrack. Radio was the soundtrack to your life. We grew up, we didn't have streaming, we didn't have the world on demand. We had to, as a lot of us did, had blank cassette tapes, and I would record my favorite songs off the radio when they were new, they were going to be announced or newly played. And it is, being the GM of a local nonprofit public radio station, it means we're part of people's lives. And when you're local and you can react in real time to what's going on in the world around you, and you can present arts and culture to the city and the community that supports you, it's an incredibly meaningful thing. It's not something, some pre-programmed package that comes from the Midwest or some office in New York saying you're going to play this today and that's it, and it's all voice tracked and sort of sterile. This kind of radio really does have an impact on people's lives day to day, and we hear it, as I'm sure you've gotten calls over the years in the air. We get calls, aside from like, what was that song, to why are you doing this? You're changing. No, we're not. But people take you that seriously, that they want to know and they want to be a part of it, and they feel like they belong to a community. And again, before the internet, radio was one of the early forms of social media. It was what we kind of gathered around.
It was the social media.
It was. Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
Real time, not newspaper.
You did plan to tune in at 7:10 to hear what the concert announcement was going to be, because there was no other way to find that information out.
It's been a long journey for you, Mike. You've seen a lot happen in 20 years. Let's talk about being a kid and then going, breaking the mic for the first day from the station you were listening to.
Yeah, that was a crazy experience. But yeah, growing up in Natick, it's the halfway point between Boston and Worcester. So of course I had the Boston stations, BCN, FNX, all those stations. But AAF also came in very clear. So it was usually just AAF. They were playing the kind of music I loved. They had the personalities I really loved back then, like Ian O'Malley and EJ Crummy and Harvey Warfield. I used to wake up, listen to Bob and Zip, going to high school in the morning. And so that was like, it was social media, because you would have people call in and give their opinions, and then, they would give their opinions, other people would react to those opinions. So you had a place for your community to have a voice. And most radios pretty much like that. But
I think that in WAF's defense and in WICN, you actually had control. It was personality radio, and right up to the end, you were still a ton of personality radio. A lot of radio stations, because they're owned by larger groups, don't get a chance to break that format. As we know, on Friday, there was a lot of stories about crazy things that happened over the last 20 years, but that's what makes it a personal, local, real thing.
It's a connection. That's why I think live local radio is very important, because radio is, it's free, and it's really one of the most immediate sources of information. If your internet goes down, your Wi-Fi goes down, your app freezes, whatever, you can always switch on the radio and find out, well, what's going on here? What's happening in the world? What's happening down the street from me?
What's the traffic like?
Right, traffic, weather, local politics, or if something kind of emergency happens or something like that. Radio's right there, with several different choices for it.
Technically speaking, like when satellite came, people were like, oh, the radio's done. It's absolutely not done. And in so many ways, for all the reasons you just stated, it's more important than it's ever been. It's how radio is being done that's changed over a period of time. As a general manager, I'm sure this is your backyard.
You know, we've seen really Telecommunications Act passed in 96, that changed everything. It allowed large companies to buy up and own unlimited amounts of radio stations around the country and then consolidate efforts. So a lot of people lost their jobs. You lost a lot of the local flavor from stations that were operating autonomously were now part of a larger group that said, here's what you're gonna play, here's who's gonna host, and that's it. And for a station like this, where, and I think there's a parallel with AAF, you know, we're a public station, we operate a little bit differently. Our hosts choose all their own music. There's no playlist. There's no, you have to play this. They choose whatever they want to play. Growing up, to in the importance of local radio, one of the things that I think AAF had with their audience for years and years was they were always kind of the scrappy underdog. They were the Worcester station. The signal wasn't that great in Boston for a time. There was always this, it's us against them. And people really, if you were on the us side of things, you were really committed. There was the AAF army. And I think, you know, I remember back in the 90s, especially in the early 2000s, when it was the battles with BCN and with FNX to be the real alternative station and stuff. And the AAF fans were bananas in a good way. And they really rallied for that station, for the host. And they felt like they were part of something. If you're, you know, part of a large radio group that every station in every city is there's the same KISS, there's the same top 40 station that sounds exactly the same, for imaging all the way down, you lose all of that flavor and all of that passion people have for your product.
Exactly.
I worked in Richmond, Virginia, which is a very nice city. Down south, things are a little slower, you know, people are a little more polite, I guess you could say. So I come back to Massachusetts. I luckily land the job at AAF. And then one, just cracking that mic and saying, you know, it's the only station that really rocks, it's WAAF. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this on a microphone at the radio station I've been listening to my whole life. One of the first phone calls I take is a request. And it's someone from, I remember so clearly, it was someone from Groton. And he was like, oh, can you play some Seven Dust? And I was like, yeah, sure. We'll try to get some Seven Dust on for you. And then it was like, when? I'll try to get it on as soon as I can. But do you have a time? Like, not really right now. He's like, you're not going to play it. And before I could say anything, he hung up the phone. And I went, oh, yeah, it's like that here. But more than that, you know, the listeners, yes, yeah. Bananas is a good word. Crazy. Rabid, but all in such a good way. Yeah. You want that connection, right, and create that passion.
That's right.
And I've never experienced, I've only worked at a handful of radio stations, but I've never experienced the passion and the intensity of AAF listeners. And at first it really scared me. I was scared of our listeners because they were so passionate. I wasn't used to it. You know, it's the first time I've experienced this. So I go out on an appearance, or I go to one of the many shows, like a indoor beach party or a Loco Bazooka or one of the big concerts we put on, and people are going nuts, not just for the bands, but for the DJs and for themselves. Like when you get 1,000 AAF listeners together, it becomes a very volatile situation in many, many ways.
It's passionate.
Yeah, okay. Very passionate. Yeah, and so it was a lot of really excited, intense dudes. And that is something I'm really gonna miss, is that, because without that passion and intensity to feed off of, we wouldn't have had that underdog attitude. And there was this kind of like the Boston stations kind of looked down their nose at anything outside the, you know, 128. It was like you were fighting for respect, and you could hear, you know, the condescending tones in their voices and stuff, or they're out there in the sticks in Worcester. We took all that, and the listeners took all that and owned it and said, yeah, you're right. You're right about all that stuff. So, you know.
Yeah, I drive a plow.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
What?
Yeah, I deliver parts, you know, I work on a construction site. Yeah, and then, you know, AAF is with us, you know, and we were with them too. So yeah, it's that, you know, and you want that connection with the community. And that's why live and local is so important.
That's right.
Because on more than one occasion, we took to our listeners and we said, look, somebody needs help. Somebody's in trouble. And our listeners immediately reacted. I mean, these are people who would set a car on fire or, you know, it's smash a window or something. But then when you ask them for help, they were there. They were there tenfold, you know, all the time.
Speaking of which, the Worcester Food Bank is now the Greater Boston Food Bank. And back in the day, WAF was the station that helped the Worcester Food Bank become what they are today. The Sit For It, the Walk For Change.
Yeah, Walk and Rock For Change, all that stuff.
Yeah, I remember it was when they were just the Walk For Change. They didn't have,
they didn't have the rock part.
Because Greg didn't want to walk anymore.
Yeah, that's right. And right, you know, it's tough. I've walked a few times. I give it to you. That's tough. That's a tough walk.
But it's a good cause.
But
all the years of that, and I think that's the thing, because it's not just the music. It's you build an audience, and then the philanthropy that happened out of that was actually pretty huge too.
Late 90s, early 2000s, there's a show. This is the height of the war between AAF and BCN, who was the rock station. And there was a show that was at the old Avalon in Boston that AF was presenting, and then BCN got wind, and there was a, became a whole radio drama, and they were going to drop the record and not do the, all the muscling they typically do. And the BCN jocks got to go and host the show, and it was all AF fans who, the hosts from BCN that were there emceeing the show, were frightened for their lives. I thought they were going to get murdered on stage.
It was a live broadcast. It was a live broadcast, and they were doing the AF chant on the BCN live broadcast.
I believe it was an AF chant that included some language that may not be radio appropriate.
Oh, dear.
Did that happen? I don't know. Yeah.
Mike's tender sensibilities have been offended.
Yeah, really.
My apologies.
Not our listeners. Yeah, I think that happened on more than one occasion. Yeah. And those days with BCN were, that was a real war. That was, it actually at times came down to physical altercation between our street teams. And there was always vying for position with your van or with your banners. And our promotions team worked really hard and crazy hours. They were the frontline soldiers for that. And that was a pretty common thing. And but you know what? It helped build that passion we were talking about. Yeah. It made our listeners like, we're backing you up. There was a time where this band called Static X was doing a CD signing at the Newbury Comics that used to be in Shrewsbury. Yeah. And so we show up in our giant rock bus, and we have like a 5-person street team, and we're doing a live broadcast and everything. And I get out, and I see a little WFNX van, not even a van, just kind of one of those little cargo thing, little box truck things.
There's not a lot of parking in Lynn.
Yeah, exactly, right? So one of their DJs standing outside, and he's surrounded by guys. And so I walk up there, and I can, as I get closer, I'm hearing what they're saying to him, and they're going, "You don't even play this band. Why are you here? And he goes, "What are you doing?" And he goes, "You call it, what's this? Is this your van?" And I know, right? And I'm like, "Oh no." So I go, I kind of like wade in there. I wade in there and I go, "Hey, what's up, everybody?" It's like, "Oh, all right, AF's here and everything's cool." And they get back in line, and I look at the FNX guy, who's Adam 12, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Who's one of my favorite DJs ever. Yeah. And he's like, "Oh my God, I thought I was gonna get killed." And I said, "No, they wouldn't hurt anybody. I'm sorry that they were like that and stuff." But there were instances like that, and the listeners really took that seriously because they wanted to own every name they were called.
Yeah.
You know, but again, that's the passion you want, and live and local radio can make that happen for, you know, not just the crazy stuff we're talking about, but for really great things that also happen with WAAF.
Exactly. I mean, it's people's careers. It's, I mean, businesses. So let's talk about, like, you know, the music community. The Palladium was like epic core center for the music that got played. One of the last shows I saw at the Worcester Odd was Korn, and it was something that WAAF promoted. That was like the first show they played in this market was at the Worcester Odd. The music that they brought people to Worcester and kept the center of the city alive when, quite frankly, wasn't a great place to hang out.
It was not. As a kid, the first concert I ever saw was at the old EM Lowe's, which is now the Palladium, and it hasn't changed that much other than the name, but, and I think it was an AF Present show. I was 12 years old, since 1983. It was Quiet Riot with a local band called August opening up, and Quiet Riot had just hit it big with Come On Feel the Noise, and it was a big deal.
Wow.
In a sold out show, but it was downtown Worcester at that time. It was still like, my mom didn't really want to drop me off. You know, she's like, "You'd be right here, right as the show lets out and get us going." But that was, you know, you walk in, it's a lot of guys in black t-shirts, but it was all AF fans that we all were introduced to this band through this radio station, and this is our, and they're in Worcester, they're not playing in Boston, this is ours.
I'm going to mention that Mike is now a resident of Worcester. As a former, he was an outlier, and then he recommitted, let's talk about your journey as a Worcester resident.
Yeah, I moved here 20 years ago, and I have to admit, it wasn't my first choice, you know, because I came back, wanted to live in Boston, but I'd lived in Richmond, Virginia through the 90s. While all the craziness happened, all the rents went up and everything. And I came back and I found, you know, I used to be like, you could go and get a 2-bedroom apartment in Brighton, pretty nice place for like $600 a month. Right. And now that's, I don't know what that could be now. I don't even want to look. Right. It's insane. And my wife and I were like, this, what happened? And I grew up in Natick. So I was like, I'll just move back to Natick. Well, that wasn't any better, you know, and we just kept going west. And so let's just check out Worcester. And it was a place that we could afford. It's a smaller city, so at that, you know, it was reasonable to get around. Yeah. And as we drove around here and looked around, it's like, you know what, Worcester's pretty awesome. It's like any city. It's got, you know, it's got some bad parts, but it's also got some really beautiful parts to it. We said, this looks like a place we want to lay down roots. And we've been here for 20 years, and we've watched this city make great strides. Yeah. I mean, just do amazing things. And take areas that were really depressed or not cared for and really just made them into beautiful parts of the city and done programs like the whole powwow program.
It's amazing, yeah.
It's great. I love how they bring these artists in, local artists and artists from all over the world, mm-hmm. and paint these beautiful murals. And then you invite the world to come to Worcester and say, look what they did here.
Right.
I like that it's not just inviting business to come in, but right. encouraging cultural things.
Right.
You know, like art and music and the Hanover Theater bringing in, you know, all sorts of productions.
Everything.
You know, everything.
I mean, literally anything. We saw Steve Martin there, which is one of our favorite shows. Yeah. It was fantastic. I'm like, Worcester is that kind of town. Anybody can come here now.
Most cities right. that go through this form of sort of urban renewal, entropy, however you want to phrase it, it's always the artists come first because they get priced out of where they live. So Metro West, so Cambridge, and then drop rent control. Somerville got crazy expensive. The spillover happened. And artists got pushed further and further out until all of a sudden they realized, like, I can get a great live workplace in Worcester for not a lot of money. So they come, and then there's restaurants opening, and people are doing, they're able to do their farm-to-table versions at a price point that makes it viable to have a business. This building didn't look like this 3 years ago. This building's right. been, the printer's building has been gentrified. They spent millions of dollars to bring this building back to where it is, and you walk downtown. I've said before, but if you told me 25 years ago that as an adult at this age, I'd be working downtown Worcester, what are you, nuts? And there's a sense of pride coming to work. It's the common. I can take my dog when she's at work. I can take her across the common and go walk through and pick up lunch and enjoy a day outside. This business is happening here. There's a quality of life that people don't recognize. And to your earlier point, when you drive around Worcester, you know, there's certain pockets of the city that aren't great. But I've had people come to my house that haven't been here before. And they come and they go, I feel like I'm in the suburbs. And the city has that feel. 10 minutes away is the downtown core.
What was the thing for you that after you'd moved here, that you saw the first piece of change, you said, this looks cool?
I think I noticed there was a lot more art pop-up stuff happening.
Yeah.
And like you said, that's the artists that come in first because they need a space and they don't have a lot of money. And then after that, it was the influx of really great restaurants.
Yeah.
And then people talking about these great restaurants and then going, they're in Worcester, and the reaction is like, really? It's like, yes.
RSV Abbey was a huge part of that.
Right, yeah.
Main Street, so it's a bar restaurant on Main Street that was one of the first kind of real craft beer locations that was doing these really incredibly curated menus of drinks and food. And then Dead Horse Hill opens across the street, and it's another sort of farm-to-table, artisan-driven restaurant that's successful. And these sort of hidden gems that aren't so hidden anymore.
Right, well, it's like, for me, it was 111 Chop House, and then it was... was it Flying Rhino, right? That stretch, when it started to pop and it bounced up and down the street, and I was like, wow, this street, as to Mike's point, was something I used to blast through to get to the Centrum and then
right.
blast out
right.
to go back home on Route 9. And I think the thing is, we'll bring it back to the art thing, the radio, the communication, the music, the art, yeah. that is number one, the first thing that needs to happen. And for a lot of people, for a long time, WAF was the only thing they knew about Worcester. Local radio, it's more than just music, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, like we were saying earlier, it's a place for ideas about that specific community to come together. And in a very inexpensive way, it's the part of the identity. So someone driving through or someone living outside the city, you know, if it's a local station, they'll have that sound. You know, there used to be a lot of stations in the Boston area that played local music that had that Boston sound. You know, you could tell that was this region's sound. And local radio, I think, is key for something like what's going on here in Worcester, because you're promoting Worcester in a positive way, and the businesses coming in, and you're bringing attention to those also. So I think it's extremely important, you know, that radio remain live and local, you know.
Amen. And, you know, for a station like WICN, which is a public radio station, the majority of our funding for operations comes from listener support, from membership, sustaining donors, and we do fund drives on the air 4 times a year. We do other fundraising endeavors, you know, whether through concerts and other events that we do. We partner with a lot of organizations to do events that will generate revenue for both endeavors. But we see it, our last couple of fund drives, thankfully, have been very successful because the listeners to the station care, and they feel a sense of pride and ownership. When I took over as GM, one of the first things that I did was, we're an NPR affiliate. We don't really talk about being an NPR affiliate. We're, you know, we're paying to carry the news at the top of the hour. So on the air, the branding is now Worcester's only NPR station, because for people that are new to Worcester or have lived here for generations, whatever the case may be, that pride of ownership of this is, it's not a Boston NPR station. This is our little NPR station. This is our little homegrown shop where most of the hosts are volunteers that are doing this out of the love for what they do. And the money that they have comes from donations from listeners and from supporters that say, I want to contribute to make this thing an ongoing entity for 52 years.
I also think that local radio helps promote that pride.
Yeah.
You know, so the people hear it. When you hear something in media or like radio or you see it on television, it kind of validates it a little bit. You feel that pride. It's like, hey, they're talking about my town.
Right. Right.
You know, they're talking about my city.
Right.
They're talking about my neighborhood. They're talking about people I know. Right. And I feel proud that that's going out over the airwaves and other people can hear it. You know, it's like everybody's hearing about Worcester, and I, you know, it gives me a sense of pride.
I speaking of sense of pride, I'm the most going to give you the most obscure thing ever that vocal radio does great. You're in high school, and it's snowing out, and you're listening to the radio station to find out if your school closing is happening.
Yeah. You're like, come on.
Come on, Natick. Come on, Natick.
Get to the ends. Come on, Natick.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Worcester, we're like, come on, get
I know,
the
you're at the end of the, Worcester's at the end of the
list. That's a lot of anticipation. Yeah. But think about that. What do you participate in now that has that immediacy and that intimacy, you know, for all the social media in the world that we have? We don't have that anymore.
There's not that anticipation anymore. I mean, you get the app. I mean, if you're going to talk specifically about snow closures, I mean, the kids now, they just get the
Weather Channel.
Actually, their school text messages.
Right.
So, you know, you don't have the anticipation. And I do think that's kind of sad. I grew up in Chelmsford. I listened to AAF. And I definitely did, you know, 5:30 in the morning, you turn on that radio and you wait. Luckily, Chelmsford didn't have to wait as long to see. So I got through it pretty quickly. But the key was my parents were teachers in Lowell. So hopefully they still had to go to school.
50 years on the radio station, you have now find yourself in a second act of your life.
Yeah.
What are you going to do, Mike? What are you thinking about?
I want to try to pursue where this type of media is going. I want to stay in radio because I love radio, but also I want to pursue things like podcasting, you know, stuff like that, and maybe pursue more of the production part, maybe even the programming part of radio. But you know, right now I'm kind of just getting it all in order. Right. But I'd love to stay in radio. I've been in radio pretty much since I was, you know, 19 years old.
Wow.
So I'd like to continue that. I just love it. I've loved it ever since I was a little kid. We used to take long drives, visit family all over the country in our little Datsun. And we had an AM radio, and that's when I first fell in love with it, mostly from those DJs in the 70s from WABC in New York, because they just sounded amazing. They had huge voices, and they sounded like they were having fun all the time, and that's kind of what got me hooked on
the
it.
The echo so. On in the background.
Oh, yeah, they were just like, just tooling
reverb,
away.
Reverb.
Yeah, oh, yeah, big giant, you know, you're expecting these big giant guys with huge chins and stuff. And, but that's, I love it, so I'd like to stay in radio around here specifically. Because I love it. I love Massachusetts, and I love living in Worcester.
Yeah. I love that determination, though. There's not a lot of people that wake up when they're 12 years old and say, "I know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life," right? And then to, you know, some short years later to be doing that thing. That's
absolutely incredible. Pretty lucky.
Yeah, you are fortunate, absolutely, because some people work jobs their whole life that they don't really love doing.
Right.
And I think the reward to be able to do what you love for people who love it more than you is got to be insane.
Yeah.
Can you share with me, is there an impactful moment where you just realize the gravity of everything all of a sudden closing in at once on you about what you just went through with the station?
It was definitely a sucker punch in the gut, because we were ready to relaunch WAAF, the long-running Hillman Morning Show, moved to WEEI. So we were going to start focusing on being an all music station, playing music in the morning too, but still trying to get back that attitude. And our new program director who came in from Milwaukee, Joe Calgaro, he had been a fan of AAF for a long time, being a hardcore radio guy himself. And he wanted to come in and make AAF that station that broke bands again, like we did with Godsmack and Seven Dust and all the bands you mentioned, like Korn and like Stained.
Right, Stained.
You know, all these bands making new rock bands. Right. There's a lot of new bands out there making rock music. They need an outlet. So he wanted to be that outlet and to go out and broadcast live like we used to, you know, from everywhere and anywhere, and put on giant shows like Loco Bazooka and the Indoor Beach Party and stuff like that. The big gig was going to be one of the first of many of those shows. And we went out and we had, he was going to make it all live, all night long, all day, 24/7. Someone would be there talking on the mic. You could react with, make a connection with. And we had logos made up for the shows. We did photo shoots. And so we were ready. We were ready, like, you know, put the helmet on and just start fighting again, right. You know, fighting our way to the top like we did with BCN back in those days. And but the company that owns us saw a more, you know, profitable path, and they decided to take it. And at the end of the day, radio, well, the commercial radio is a business. Well, I shouldn't
it's
say
a
that.
Business, it's all business.
It's all business, because
yeah.
You have to rely on the generosity of listeners.
Absolutely.
And we have to do that with,
and,
you know,
and
with
grantors,
clients.
Yeah.
So, you know, they saw a more profitable way to go about it, and they decided to go with that. And that's disappointing to me. That's something that will, I think, always bother me. We were lucky to have those last 2 days to say goodbye, and that's very rare in this business. Usually it's like, okay, you're done, pack up your stuff, leave the building right away. But we were given a chance to say goodbye and do it in a way we wanted to. So that was very fortunate, but I'll always think, like, they could have given us like a year to just get back
into
the fight.
You know, just show
something.
Spike. Yeah,
just give it a try and see, you know, and we never got that chance. But you know what? I may have that chance again. In a sense, we're still fighting.
Well, you are. You know? And I can sense that you're not done. And you still are very connected to your audience. Is that concert going to still happen?
The concert's still happening.
Okay, could you please
because
let
it's
everybody
almost,
know what's going on?
Okay, so it's almost sold out. So it's like, you got to put the concert on. So it was going to be our 50th anniversary concert, the WAF big gig. I don't think they're calling it that anymore, but... it's
show
God's
with Mike
man.
And Carrie.
I know, right? Yeah. It'll be nice going to the show and just having a few beers and watching, instead of usually we're running around. Yeah. We get 5 minutes of one band here and five here and doing interviews. But so it's going to be Godsmack and Hailstorm and Theory of a Dead Man and Dirty Honey and Dinosaur Pileup,
which was one of the new bands that they had so much hand in breaking and bringing to an audience.
Yeah, Dirty Honey is a band that's not really, I'd say the music they make is like classic rock, but it's fresh because these guys are young. They love bands like Aerosmith and Motley Crue and stuff. So they're giving their fresh take on it. And Dinosaur Pileup, they have a 90s kind of sound, you know, so they're giving a fresh take on that. And, you know, and that's what we're ready to do, break some new bands, get some big shows going and stuff. But that show's still going on April 25th, DCU Center here in Worcester. It's going to be a great show.
And you will be there.
I will definitely be there.
Okay. How can people stay connected with you? What are you using for social media now?
I'm on, you know, being in radio, you got to just do all social media. Right. You got to cast that wide net. So Twitter, I'm at Mike Hsu AAF still for now. On Instagram, I'm Mike Hsu Rock. On Facebook, you can just, it's facebook.com/MikeShuAAF still.
So you're not done. You have so much to do. The show's coming up.
Yeah.
Come meet you, say hi to you. You should.
Oh,
post.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, I'm around Worcester all the time. You know, I'm always out finding some great new restaurant or place to hang out. There's always something great going on.
For sure.
You know, check. I'll actually have a little more time to check out bands, which is good. Something I love doing is, you know, discovering new music, you know, and we got great clubs here. I'll be wandering around town, you know, making a nuisance of myself.
Absolutely. So. Well, we wouldn't have any other way, I guess.
It's great to have you here. Hopefully this is not your only appearance at WICN, and we'll...
Oh, no, thank you very much for having me.
My
family listens to ICN all the time. I wake up to ICN.
Oh, good.
I shouldn't. Should I say that? Yeah, I can say that now, right? I'm not working.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Let her up. She does a great job.
Thank you very much.
Right, well, thanks for being here.
Great to meet you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm here with the new member of the WICN Street Team, Mike. Well, at least it didn't, the AF goodbye didn't degrade into an Airheads scenario where they barricade the door.
It was suggested by many listeners, and the way we spoke of our listeners, that I was afraid that might happen.
Yeah,
but thank you for not doing that.
You know, local radio is important. Local radio is critical. It's not a thing. It's a community. Mike's here as a Worcester resident to tell you how much it means to him, and David's here fighting the good fight to keep the station up, and we're here doing Business Beat to bring this to you as well. Thank you for watching, and we'll see you next time.